morning Mar Mixa. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Great, and we can hear you. You were in our studio a few weeks ago, and we had a long talk about something that fascinates a lot of people here, and that's how the whole economic crisis was dealt with in Iceland. But we started, of course, with the whole story before that, and that was how the financial world in Iceland, in a very short time, in a few decennia, soared. And then the end of our talk was when it was crumbling down very, very quickly. You explained two things to us already. That was that in Iceland, the debt of the banks was so immensely high that there was no question of saving them by the government. That was simply completely impossible, so that solution was not available, so they didn't. And then there was a second thing that was very interesting, that there was a special law that was voted in Iceland to protect the savings of people. Do I remember this correctly?
Yes, this is basically the story what happens, and as you said, this happened very swiftly. There have been omens that things could end badly, very obvious and definite warning signs. But as we talked about a few weeks back, things began, and this is the usual way that financial crashes occur, that little by little the signs are becoming clearer that things could go badly. And then there's usually some sort of event that triggers the final straw, so to speak. And that was Lehman Brothers. So things were happening very quickly the last few days of September and first days of October 2008. And what happens is that Iceland decided to protect all of the savings within the banks. Savings account were guaranteed 100%.
So yeah. That means that people had some kind of buffer. But what I asked myself afterwards, did people have many savings, or was everybody investing their money in risky hedge funds and putting money in houses?
Yes, there were definite losses. Yes, you had pretty many people that had money in savings accounts. And this was deemed necessary simply to keep the economy humming.
Yes.
Unless you would have done that, the financial officers would have just gone to the bank and taken up cash to pay their workers, etc. So this was deemed very necessary.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that, yes, some people lost enormous amounts of money because the stock market as a whole, it lost approximately 90% of its value just within a span of a few days. The main reason is that the major companies on the stock market were financial companies, and their equity became worthless. So it didn't matter basically what percentage you were losing. What mattered was how much you put into it. And this had very bad effects on many people because the population as a whole had invested more in stocks than ever before historically.
And that was all gone?
That money disappeared completely.
So, but the money they had in saving accounts was still there. But then, didn't it lose a lot of its value? Wasn't there a devaluation of the Icelandic crown?
Yes, the Icelandic krona, there was a major swing in the Icelandic krona, and just an example, you needed only 60 Icelandic kroners to buy a dollar in late 2007, and admittedly, short point, after the crash, you needed 150 kroners to buy the same U.S. dollar.
Okay, but nobody was interested maybe in buying U.S. dollars?
Not so, but, well, there were some people that were still interested in buying U.S. dollars because that was like the safety that was in people's minds, the safety net, and as it's the metaphor of everyone trying to get out of a burning building at once, people don't necessarily make rational decisions. So even though that would have been a rather high price at that point. Yeah, there were still actually some people that were convinced that the Icelandic krona would lose even more value at that point. So actually, I took a boat at my bank that I was working at, and everyone except maybe two or three people out of like 20 workers were convinced that the Icelandic krona would lose still more value, which maybe shows that even the bankers were scared that things could become even worse.
Yes, because I forgot, indeed, you were working in a bank at the time, so you were right in the middle of the whole, what shall I call it, whirlpool of events?
Yes, and the effects were incredible. There were currency restrictions were set in Iceland that are still in place, but it was unbelievable to witness this, that in 2007, people could get foreign currency to buy houses, so you could maybe take maybe a loan for maybe $1 million to buy a house. And many people, incredibly enough, did that, and banks, incredibly enough, were ready to lend people money in foreign currency to buy a house. So what happens is that people were maybe receive $1 million to buy a house. 12 months later, I actually witnessed the Central Bank of Iceland denying a person something like $50. It was denied $50 to renew a subscription for a magazine. That has changed, but for a while, you could not even renew your magazine subscriptions in Iceland.
Okay, but you don't eat magazines. So were people so impoverished that they ended up living in the streets and begging, or...?
No, that thankfully did not happen. The government worked with people on various issues, for example, housing. Obviously, if you take a $1 million loan in 2007, meaning that was the equivalent of 60 million Icelandic kroners. 1 year later, that $1 million cost you 150 million Icelandic kroners. Obviously, that was money that you could not pay back.
There's a problem.
There was a huge problem. What happens is that somebody, and this is one of the incredible aspects of the aftermath, is that someone notices that those loans were probably illegal. Banks were not allowed to lend people these loans. So there was a court case, and it wound up the court case that those loans were deemed illegal. And basically, if you received 60 million Icelandic kroners, you only had to pay 60 million Icelandic kroners back. And the interest rates that were in foreign currency that were much lower than Icelandic interest rates, they still held. So people that basically thought that they were bankrupt woke up a few years later, a couple of years later, finding out that the loans that they thought that had gone up in value, well, in value for the bank in Icelandic kronas, those loans were incredibly enough the best loans that you could actually have, because you were paying very low interest on those loans. So very many people actually wound up better having taken those irrational loans. However, most loans in Iceland for properties, property loans, they are indexed linked, which means that they are tied to the consumer price index. And when the Icelandic krona plummets like it did then, everything that is imported to Iceland skyrocketed in value, which meant that the consumer price index went up approximately 20%. So people that have taken more rational loans, they skyrocketed in value, whilst housing prices, they went down approximately 20%. So many people actually lost all their equity in their houses, meaning that they owned maybe 20% in their houses, 20 or 30%, but all that value evaporated with the combination of their loans going up and the value of their houses going down. So the government implemented a tax rebate for paying down interest on their loans, and it also set up what is called the 110 rule, meaning that if you owned the house, for example, and it was valued at 100 kroners, but the loan attached to the house was more than 110 kroners, then the loan itself was lowered to only 10% above the market value of the house.
Okay, so 110% was the maximum.
Yeah.
The legal maximum. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to say this in a concise manner. I hope that this is somewhat understandable because this is a rather unusual method.
It is, yes. I don't see another country where this was applied.
No, this has not been done anywhere else, as far as I know either.
But who paid for that? Because somewhere someone doesn't get the money that he thought he originally would get.
Basically, those were the banks that had lent the money who took the hit. And basically, that meant that creditors of the banks, they got even less back because of this. So in short, basically, the government weighed the need of the society versus what was right for the banks, what was how much of a hit the banks should take. Mm-hmm. And this obviously has been controversial. Practically, no matter what was done, things would have been controversial. But this was the fine line that the government found out between the banks taking part of the hit because they were lending in a reckless manner. Mm-hmm. And it must also be added that the population was also in a state of frenzy, irrational frenzy of optimism regarding the future.
But one more question. You said that all banks went bankrupt, yes? So there were no more banks.
Yes, all the three major banks went bankrupt.
Ah, yeah.
And most of the savings banks also went bankrupt. There were a few very small bank entities that did not go bankrupt. But, you know, in a generalized manner, the banking system went bust. Mm-hmm. And what happens in the aftermath of that is that there are new banks formed very hastily in order to keep the financial system afloat. Mm-hmm. So instead of having, for example, Glitnir, you had a bank called the New Glitnir. I'm not making this up. And Kaupthink was the New Kaupthink, etc. The names have been changed since then, but basically the bank's operation, they kept on humming, and that is probably close to a miracle that that was achieved.
I don't understand why they would keep the old names. I mean, that wouldn't be very big publicity if they just failed.
Yeah, it is actually remarkable that those failed banks kept on humming, and in a matter of a few days, and this had to be readdressed quite a few times though, new balance sheets were formed, and the government pumped in some money for the new banks. So
and also they had the protected savings accounts that were still there.
Yes, they had the savings accounts.
Okay, so they could restart a bit based on that.
Exactly, yeah. So in short, you could not tell the operations, incredibly enough, they kept on going. One major difficulty was that the SWIFT system, which is kind of the information system for foreign currencies coming back and forth, the SWIFT system almost collapsed. There was one bank that could do it. That was, incidentally, the bank that I worked at, IceBank, because the new banks could not create a new SWIFT system. It takes a while to do that. So the IceBank kept humming for half a year more, and that was for a while the only source of a way of getting money into Iceland. And what happens is that the banks are reorganized. Pretty many people people lose their jobs there and they're downsized quite a bit. But the banking system actually kept on going. So in a way that most Icelanders did not see a major difference on the surface. The major difference was maybe that bankers working at the banks were simply incredibly tired and exhausted because they were dealing with quite a many of customers that were facing losses mm-hmm. more than they ever imagined. And just to give an example, the banks quickly changed the way the settings was within the banks. So, for example, there were no private rooms anymore because it was happening very often that people were screaming at bankers when they're in a closed setting, but they were less likely to do so in an open setting. What happens is also that the government proposed to save one bank. It was going to buy all of its equity. Not all of its equity, but three-fourths of its equity. That was Glitnir. Mm-hmm. But after having gone through the numbers, the government decided 1 week later not to do this. Glitnir became basically bankrupt September 29th, I think it was, or the 30th. And the government, having seen the dire strait of the bank, decided not to save the bank and let it go bankrupt. This helped the central bank and the government to make the decision not to save the other two banks, Kaupthink and Landsbankinn. Although the government did lend Kaupthink quite a hefty sum in an attempt to salvage the bank. It had a collateral that the government deemed was very safe, but as it turned out, there have been some losses on that loan. But it's unclear to what extent those losses will be. So, to sum things up, the government did make attempts to save the banks, and the central bank, for example, lent the banks something around 3 billion euros, mm-hmm. which in short-term notes, which I must add is one of the main duties of central banks today. That is commonly accepted view. So it's not that the government or the central bank did not aid the banks and keeping them afloat, but mm-hmm. it was much less than many other governments mm-hmm. did, and it was probably a combination of luck and foresight and the simple fact that the banks were just way too big for the government or the central bank to make a big difference.
But were there any other ideas from the government? Other things the government did to help the population overcome this very heavy crisis period?
Yes, well, the government did put people to work. The jobless rate was 2% before the crisis, and it skyrocketed up to approximately 8 to 9% following the crash. Mm-hmm. And this is practically unknown in Iceland for the last decades. Mm-hmm. So the government did put quite a few people to work. There were tax rebates, and there was a definite effort in trying to decrease this jobless rate. Mm-hmm. What happens is, though, that incredibly enough, things become both much cheaper in Iceland for foreigners since the Icelandic currency plummeted as it did. Mm-hmm. There has been quite a lot of advertising regarding Iceland for tourists, and the volcano eruption, Eyjafjallajökull, in 2010, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
That eruption, which basically put all airports, just all air mm-hmm. traffic in Europe, just wiped it out for a few days. There's a strange twist that this was probably the best advertisement Iceland ever has received because all those trapped tourists began wondering what's so special in Iceland. Uh-huh. And tourism is booming in Iceland.
Great. It sounds like a nice country, too. But I always heard it was a bit expensive, so it's not expensive anymore.
Well, I would not say it's cheap today, but it's not as expensive as it was. That's definite.
And then another thing, have there been lawsuits against irresponsible bankers or irresponsible politicians?
Yes, there have been lawsuits. Well, actually, the former prime minister, he was found guilty of negligence in his job. there's been a great deal of controversy regarding that, and not the least that he was handpicked, because there are good reasons to argue that he was not the only one responsible for what had happened. Actually, there are very good reasons to say that he alone should have not been prosecuted.
So he was a bit of a scapegoat then?
Yeah, it saddens me to say that he was a scapegoat. Pretty much most Icelanders, no matter what party line they follow, agree on that. So that's something that should have been addressed in a much better way.
Mm-hmm. And then bankers? Have the bankers been sentenced to jail?
Yes, there have been a few bankers sent to jail already. And there are probably a few more also going to jail because of various fraud issues that have been taken to court.
It's still pending, so that's...
Yes, some of the cases are still pending. That is not unusual. Just an example that most cases following the Great Crash in America, 1929, most cases, fraud cases, were actually finalized around 6-7 years later. So now it's been, 6 years? So, yes, this is the usual time it takes for major fraud cases to be brought to court and judged upon. So this is basically something that is in the process. But there have been a few bankers sent to jail or fined in one way or another.
And has there been new legislation to prevent such things in the future? Has the criminal system gone completely back to the old rigid system, or...?
In a way, it has gone back to the old way, in a sense, but not really that much. There was a special prosecution office established following the crash, and that prosecution office specializes in fraud cases regarding money. Mm-hmm. And that office has various rights to follow up its investigations. But I would not say that the law has been changed a lot to prevent such cases. And such things are often very controversial, how you do things. My guess is, though, that there will be better checks and balances rather than changing the laws dramatically. Also, it's probably a known fact that savings accounts, they'll be to a great degree protected by the government, meaning that if banks go bankrupt, it will be with the money of the creditors and the owners that will be losing the money, not people's savings accounts going down the toilet.
I get the impression that in the whole event that foreigners or foreign banks or whatever lost a lot of money. Is that right? I'm asking because of we got the situation in Argentina now, where there was this foreign debt that was written off largely but not completely, and you got the vulture funds buying off those last 5% and then trying to cash in completely, and now there's a judge in America asking to pay those vulture funds back and not before paying the other debt back. Aren't there any cases against Iceland?
Yes, there have been cases against Iceland, and I was incidentally co-judge in two of those cases. So what happens was that some foreign banks, they wanted money from Icelanders. And in short, they dealt with that the Icelandic government should have taken more preemptive measures and sent out warning signs that the Icelandic banking system was about to crumble.
But some of that debt is under U.S. contracts, apparently, like the Argentina debt. That's why it's being dealt with in North American courts. Don't you have similar situations with the Icelandic debt?
Well, there's a great difference because the issue in Argentina is that you have a government that was issuing debt, for example, in the U.S.
Yeah.
In Iceland, those were banks that were privately owned.
Mm-hmm.
So the main issue was whether the Icelandic government failed in some ways. And it's a tricky issue because obviously the Icelandic government could have reasons to know better, but at the same point one must ask why did all the foreign banks enable the Icelandic bank to expand so rapidly?
Mm-hmm.
There's a great book that Michael Lewis wrote called Boomerang, world. And he takes Germany as an example. And he points out that German banks, they did not themselves invest in high-risk securities, but they did lend money to other banks, quite a lot of money to other banks that were investing in those high-risk securities that they themselves were avoiding. So basically, the issue is most often who is responsible for the losses of such loans. Generally, it has been accepted that the foreign banks that lent the Icelandic banks, they should have done their homework better. Mm-hmm. And it is actually rather incredible how much the Icelandic banks could finance themselves through foreign banks. But one must not forget that foreign banks were also making rather rash decisions. The ABN Bank, for example, when it was bought in early 2007, if I remember correctly, it's been said by many that that was a sign of financial madness showing its face with, if I remember correctly, RBS buying it.
Yes, and our own Fortis Bank. And there was a third bank, Banco de Santander.
Yeah. Exactly. So all these acquisitions that were financed with borrowed money, they meant that if the going would keep on being good, the banks would make a lot of money. But once trouble would brew, those banks were left exposed. One could say that this is like in football terms, this is like putting a team with only Hazards and Fellainis in the team and leaving no one guarding the goal.
So we'll have to wrap it up here.
Okay.
I have one more personal question. You are not working in a bank anymore now.
No, I'm not. I worked in a bank until 2009. Since then, I've been teaching finance, mm-hmm. both teaching, and I'm finishing my PhD degree this year in finance, where I study cultural aspects and how societal issues affect people's behavior regarding money.
So, but did you have to stop your job at the bank because of the crisis?
Yes, the bank basically that I was working at, Ice Bank, they let a huge part of their staff go.
Okay.
And they went then bankrupt a couple of months later.
So they could go on a bit longer than the other banks, but finally they also had to...
Yes, and it was basically just a matter of time when they would go, well, that was my opinion at that point, that it was basically a matter of time. So I had already planned to do my studies.
So you were already moving on?
I was, yeah, mentally.
Good for you.
Moving on, yeah, yeah. What is maybe also noteworthy is that the Icelandic stock market has risen out of its ashes. So today, the market value of the Icelandic stock market is approximately 30% of Iceland's gross domestic production. Even though that is below the average, it is still quite a few companies. Three of the four insurance companies are listed today, and companies like Icelandair, for example, its stock has multiplied more than five times in the last 3 years. Obviously, the tourist boom has had incredibly good effects on that company's business.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we'll have to end here. Thank you for your time on a Saturday to complement our talk of a few weeks ago. And we'll call you again if there is another opportunity.
Okay, thanks so much. And cheers to everyone in Belgium.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks.